The following program, The Russ Belville Show, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate to the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate any illegal activity and encourage all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers on The Russ Belville Show are their own, and The Russ Belville Show cannot be held legally responsible for their validity or reliability. Viewer discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it.
And it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization. Of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Yeah, I hear you had a question for me.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
All right, good day, tokers and tokettes, and welcome. It is Thursday, March 21st, 2013, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Welcome to the show. So much to get to today, we can't waste a minute getting to it because we got a full studio today. I'll give you a look around here. You can see not only do we have Brian the Red here, but we have another Brian because two Brians are better than one.
Yeah.
Brian's here from the band Outpost. We'll be talking about some of your music in hour two. Plus, you're managing some other bands, right?
Yeah, I'm actually managing a band called Acoustic Minds right now. They are beautiful, beautiful girls that have been around the scene, in the reggae scene and in and out of all the other scenes for a while. And they've got a full band now, and they've just been crushing it up and down L.A., South by Southwest, and all that.
Awesome. Excellent. We'll have to play some of them in hour two.
Yeah, we'll get right to that. Also, Bacon Dan has stopped in, and he has brought maple bacon bars. You can show that off to you.
He brought actually a special piece for Russ.
Oh, what
did you bring for Russ?
What?
I brought you the blunt.
The blunt.
Oh, yeah.
Show that on the camera there. We're going to show the blunt.
Booyah.
Nice. Oh, very good, very good. All right, we'll be getting to that in hour two as well. But before we get to all of that stuff, we've got all the news and interviews you're used to here on hour one of the Russ Belville Show, including we're going to take a look behind the headlines today at the it's just an amazing story coming out of the welfare's war on drugs. We've been covering this just a little bit on the various states that are trying to pass drug testing to get welfare. So we'll talk about that in behind the headlines. For our Daily Toker tunes today, we'll have Bago Schwago calling in, and we've got a great tune, great hip-hop tune coming in today. This one is by, if I can find where it's located, there he is. It's called Blowing Greens, and it's by Tyrell, Antonio, and Flosha. So we'll check that out at 20 after. At half past, it's time for Cops Say Legal Drugs. We've got another Leap speaker joining us. Jason Thomas, a former detention officer in Colorado, will be joining us to talk about the war on drugs. And then at the end of the show, got time for a radical rant. Kevin Sabet is up to his old tricks again. He's been up in Alaska, or at least talking to the people in Alaska. I don't know if he visited. He's in Hawaii right now trying to start a Project Sam in Hawaii. But he spoke to the Alaska Dispatch and laid a big steaming pile of lies, half-truths, misdirections, and obfuscation that I have just got to debunk. But before we get to all that, we're going to open up with our headlines. Again, in our 420 radio news, we've got all sorts of state headlines coming up. That hemp bill in Kentucky faces a little bit of a roadblock. We'll also talk about medical marijuana in New Hampshire and legalization in Maine. It's the Russ Belville Show. Stick around. We're back right after this.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420 friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. Please do not give up your precious liberties. There's nothing wrong with standing up for our constitutional rights, and in fact, it's the only way to honor the Constitution that recognizes our natural rights. Treat law enforcement with respect and respect the Constitution by standing up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, stand up for your rights by repeating, I respectfully invoke all my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak to my attorney, Omar Figueroa. Omar Figueroa has more than a decade of experience in federal and California courts and graduated from Yale University, Stanford Law School, and Trial Lawyers College. Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215 or on the web at www.omarfigueroa.com.
Now it's time for our 420 Radio News for Thursday, March 21st, 2013. I'm Russ Belville. Medical marijuana bill approved by the New Hampshire House. This from rawstory.com. New Hampshire is one step closer to becoming the 19th state to legalize medical marijuana. On Wednesday, the State House voted 286-64 to approve legislation that would allow patients with chronic or terminal diseases to use medical marijuana if their doctors recommended it. The bill allows for state-licensed marijuana dispensaries to open and grants patients or caregivers the right to grow up to 3 cannabis plants. The bill now moves to the New Hampshire Senate, where similar legislation was approved in 2009 and 2012. The state's newly elected Democratic governor, Maggie Hassan, has given medical marijuana advocates hope that the bill will be signed into law this year. Kentucky hemp supporters blast amendment calling for further study. This from WFPL.org. Kentucky's industrial hemp supporters lashed out Thursday against a last-minute amendment to the hemp bill that's been under consideration this year in the General Assembly. State Representative Rocky Adkins, a Sandy Hook Democrat and the majority floor leader, has proposed an amendment turning the Senate-approved hemp bill into a 5-year study. It also gives the licensing responsibilities to Kentucky State Police, which argues that legalized hemp would harm law enforcement efforts to target hemp's cousin, marijuana. Agriculture Commissioner James Comer is the leading proponent of the hemp bill, which establishes a regulatory framework in Kentucky for hemp farming should the federal government ease its restrictions on the plant. Members of the Kentucky Hemp Commission were vocal in their objection to Adkins' amendment in a meeting Thursday. They pushed for a vote on the current version of the bill. Comer said Adkins' amendment doesn't have the votes to move forward and that any other amendments need to help, not hurt, the process of getting a federal waiver to grow hemp. Pingree co-sponsoring bill to legalize marijuana nationwide from the Bangor Daily News. U.S. Representative Chelly Pingree of Maine is one of 13 co-sponsors of a bill that supporters say would end marijuana prohibition at the federal level. News of the proposed legislation came on the same day that a petition drive seeking to legalize pot possession began in Portland, the largest city in Pingree's home state of Maine. The effort to decriminalize marijuana at a federal level also comes as State Representative Diane Russell, Democrat of Portland, is pursuing a bill in Augusta to do the same at the state level. In Maine, efforts are underway to make possession of 2.5 ounces or less of the drug legal, first through a citywide petition in Portland, then through state legalization. Also from Maine, lawmakers are looking at a new hemp bill from WABI-TV. Next week, state lawmakers will take up a bill that would let Maine farmers grow hemp for industrial use. If the law passes here in Maine, it would still violate federal law, similar to Maine's medical marijuana law, but supporters say it would let Maine farmers compete globally. A public hearing on the proposal is scheduled for next Thursday afternoon. GW Pharmaceuticals may stop German sales of the cannabis drug Sativex from the dailychronic.net. GW Pharmaceuticals and Almirall may stop selling the cannabis drug Sativex in Germany after health authorities refuse to agree a price that the companies view as acceptable. GW, which developed the under-the-tongue spray as a treatment for spasticity and multiple sclerosis, said on Tuesday the German authorities had determined a price that was significantly lower than in other European countries. GW said it expected to make a provision of £800,000, or $1.2 million, to reflect the impact of the pricing decision by the German National Association of Statutory Health Insurance Funds. A spokesman declined to disclose the price that had been offered in Germany. In Spain, Sativex sells for 4.4 euros, or $5.70 per day, and the cost is similar in Britain, he added. The drug, which contains active cannabis ingredients, is also on sale in Denmark, Norway, Sweden, Canada, and Israel. Sativex has not yet been approved in the United States, where it is currently being tested in final stage phase 3 clinical trials for advanced cancer pain. Cannabis in 71% of positive drug tests, this from the Otago Daily News in New Zealand. Cannabis and opiates accounted for the majority of drugs detected in the workplace, figures show. Released statistics from the New Zealand Drug Detection Agency show Otago and Southland recorded positive drug tests of 4% and 6%, respectively. Of those positive tests, cannabis was the most prevalent illicit drug, accounting for 54% of positive Otago tests and Southland's 62%. Both regions were well below the national average of 71% of total positives being for cannabis. And that's your 420 Radio News for Thursday, March 21st, 2013. I'm Russ Belville. When we come back, we go behind the headlines and take a look at welfare's war on weed and the states that are pushing drug testing for welfare recipients. You're listening to 420radio.org. This is the Russ Belville Show. Adam Hand of Handmade Apparel produces quality custom designs for t-shirts, hats, and other apparel. Handmade Apparel is the official design shop for 420 Radio, The Russ Belville Show, Ganja John, and Cascadia Concentrates, among many clients who rely on Adam Hand for everything from short-run custom projects to full-run clothing lines. Adam's meticulous designs are individually crafted and screened in vibrant high-definition color. Visit handmadeapparel.biz to browse the selection of handmade gear or to get a personal quote for your own designs. Handmade Apparel, a proud supporter of 420radio.org. All right, welcome back. Time for us to go behind the headlines. And for today's news analysis segment, we're going to take a look at welfare's war on drugs and the fact that it always fails. Always fails. This is some reporting from inthesetimes.com. Just codifies some of the research that we've already put together on this show numerous times. First of all, the Indiana Senate Health Committee last week approved a bill that would mandate drug testing for welfare recipients. Those who test positive for drugs will be required to enter a treatment program at their own expense in order to continue receiving benefits. Because if you're poor enough to get on welfare, you've got the money for a rehab you don't need. That just doesn't make any sense to me. But the reason behind this, folks, is because back in the Clinton administration, 1996, Bill Clinton got a lot of pressure from the right wing about welfare. And, you know, this was back in the 90s, you know, it was all about Democrats going to give away money to the poor, just going to give away to, you know, freeloaders and the Cadillac Queens and so on. And so with that pressure, he had this welfare to work programs that were, you know, a pretty decent program for a Republican. Yeah, I know he's a Democrat. It's a joke, folks. The act that he signed was called the Personal Responsibility and Work Opportunity Reconciliation Act of 1996. And what it does is it sets up a way for states to be able to deal with temporary assistance for needy families. And it provides a framework that allows the states to, quote, may require drug tests for welfare recipients and may penalize those who fail such tests, and implements a lifelong ban on TANF benefits for individuals convicted of a drug-related felony. Because, you know, if you were caught growing a pot plant, you shouldn't ever get food stamps ever again. You should just starve in the street because you grew a pot plant. You got a felony. Your kids are poor. Your kids are poor and they need some, you know, assistance. You can't afford groceries for the kids. Sorry, you grew a pot plant once in your life. So no more assistance for you. Yeah, Christian nation. Anyway, According to the National Conference of State Legislatures, at least seven states, including Arizona, Florida, Georgia, Missouri, Oklahoma, Tennessee, and Utah, have already passed legislation regulating drug tests for applicants to public assistance programs. And as of March, they say at least 28 states have proposed legislation that would require welfare recipients to take a drug test. Now, the way this is sold, this is often sold in a frame from a conservative standpoint, but it's one that I think even people on a progressive side might bite on. And that is this idea that, well, if they're not working and we're working so hard to make this money to give to them as welfare, by God, they shouldn't be spending it on drugs. By God, they should be out there getting work and feeding their kids, and they shouldn't be spending it on drugs. Of course, we don't stop them from spending it on alcohol, tobacco. But nevertheless, we shouldn't be allowing these welfare bums to be using their money for drugs. And that's kind of an interesting sentiment, right? You know, that once someone is poor and you're going to give them charity, you then have the right to control their behavior. You know, kind of an indentured servitude, if you will. But laying that aside for a moment, let's just put the moral stuff to the side for a moment and take a look at the actual effectiveness. If the real idea behind this welfare drug testing stuff is to make sure that we're not having a bunch of drug addicts soaking up the public dole and spending on drugs, and we're doing so in order to help our state save money, let's see how if it's really worked. In Arizona, they had this program where they, again, they wanted to drug test people for their welfare welfare assistance, and they were going to reimburse them $30 if the test comes back negative, right? Because remember, the welfare recipient has to pay for this test out of their own pocket to get welfare because, you know, they're poor and they can afford to do such things. So they spend their $30 to get to pay for their drug test, and then they get that reimbursed back to them on their first check if they turn out negative. Well, sure enough, most people turn out negative and they have to pay back that $30. Of the roughly 87,000 people tested in Arizona from 2009 to 2012, do you hazard a guess as to how many of them came back positive? One positive out of 87,000 people who applied for welfare benefits, you got one positive. Now, a lot of people will say, well, hold on, Russ, you can't really measure that because how many of those people who would have gotten welfare didn't apply for it because there was a drug test, right? We might have saved some money that way. Well, they took a look at that as well. The Arizona's Department of Economic Security originally projected a $1.7 million savings per year, $1.7 million a year that we would save in cash assistance by not giving welfare to the drug addicts, right? The people that fail the drug test, right? Projected $1.7 million. But by 2012, the state had saved $560. That's the $560 they saved on the one guy who failed the drug test. Now, you also want to figure in the 1,600 people who refused to turn in the drug test, right? There's your savings of the people who didn't take the drug test because, you know, we wouldn't give them welfare. Even if you figure that in, it's $200,000. So we've saved around $200,560 in the meantime, shelling out $200 million in welfare benefits. So there's no savings to be found there. And this is not an isolated case, people. You look at the case of Florida. They had a drug test law in place for 4 months, and then it was struck down by a federal judge. And the reason why is because, you know, even though people are poor, they still have a Fourth Amendment right. You still have to have a reasonable suspicion, a reasonable cause to a probable cause to search their bodies, to take their fluids. And just being poor isn't reasonable suspicion that you're committing a crime. But nevertheless, we do have 4 months worth of data. And in that 4 months, the state of Florida tested about 4,000 temporary assistance for needy family applicants. Of those 4,000, 108 turned positive. That's a 2.6% positive rate. And roughly 2,000 applicants who failed to take the test at all. Florida spent $118,000 reimbursing those who tested negative, a net loss of $46,000. And more than would have been paid out in benefits to those who had failed the test in the first place. So, yeah, sure. You might want to punish people or try to have some sort of moral game to determine whether or not they deserve to get their welfare. But what cost do you want to spend on that? It's costing more to deliver that moral message, don't do drugs or you don't get your welfare, than it would be if we just gave them the welfare in the first place. And of course, folks, don't forget that all of this stuff predicates on the fact that they're getting busted for marijuana, the drug that tests positive, as we saw in that New Zealand story, 70% of the drug tests that are positive are for pot. Are we really worried about people on welfare on pot? Meth, coke, and heroin, maybe. Pot, not a big deal.
Oh, have you ever met that funny
Oh, by the way, we have a tradition here at 20 After. So I hope you're all ready to join us.
Mandatory.
It's a union rule, you know. We'll be right back, folks. Stick around.
He would sell you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Here's a marijuana fun fact.
Fun fact.
If you had enough marijuana that you could build a house with it, that would be so awesome. That's a fact. Because you'd be like, dude, pack a doorknob. Roll up that fucking hallway. What are you waiting for?
I have the freedom to think however I want. This is the United States of America. And I think that I'll let Terry do the thinking for me. Terry Joyce puts the probe back in prohibition. Terry Joyce knows more about conspiracy theories than anyone in the United States of America, and that's because she makes up most of them. Terry Joyce can host a show like no one's ever seen, but that's only because no one's ever seen her host a show before. That's why I'm asking you to watch the Hollywood Hempers Hour with Terry Joyce, and you can trust me because I'm a warlock. Witch's honor.
Everyone knows music and marijuana go together, so let's wind up our 20 after break with the Russ Belville Show's Daily Toker Tunes, the best in pod-safe 420 music from around the web. Today is Groovin' Thursday, featuring rap, hip-hop, soul, and funk music. You can get downloads and more information about all our Daily Toker Tunes by visiting music.radicalrust.com. Now, sit back and enjoy your Daily Toker Tunes.
Welcome back, everybody. 22 after the hour. It's time for some Groovin' Thursday music, and I got no bag-o schwag-o. That's generally a good thing to say, right? I got no bag-o schwag-o.
Here in the Northwest.
Yeah. He's not on the line. Normally he's calling about this time, but he did leave a song for us. I don't know anything about it, so I can't really give you a decent introduction for it. I'll just tell you who's in it. This song features Flosha, Tyrell, and Antonio, and it's called Blowin' Greens.
Let me get a hit of that. Women niggas with the biggest sack. Where's that? Go on, roll the blunts. My homie get fucked up in the back of the club with a plain dope cuts. Can I handle the vibe? Really, I'm keeping the time. Four or five, got it blazing in the middle with the knives. Steady ripping the flow. Let them sing it some more. That's a psycho TY. And it's on again, doing the song again. With a hit so blazing. You can taste that bomb shit, can't you, man? I know you can.
Tastes so amazing.
My mind ain't changing, I'm on the grind. And I'm planning to keep it raw, that's all the time. Don't look at me with them lonely eyes, cause you know you mine.
Roll a tie, hit it a couple of times, pass it to you. Going green, get it high, get it up, get it, show me love up in the club. Going green, I ain't taste it, damn, I like it. I just want no snakes, no seeds for me. In my
up. I don't want that punk ass shit.
Endo, hydro, solid blow, mine real slow. Stop at the stove and pick up an Optimo. With your hoe, smashing out in Diablo. Just pick up a fresh bag of that bomb. And everybody wanna know what I'm smoking. I tell them it's the Saddam, blowing nothing but that fire ass weed. Take one puff and you're choking. Ain't no needin' hope. Sitting back behind mirror tint as I roll. To the other side of town, call up your John, cause you know it's going down. Fucking with that light green and not that brown. Acting the clown, if you know what I mean. Cause we blowing green, cause we blowing green.
So damn high, I can't maintain. Give me green, switch lane. Why the bitches in my lap? Blowing out my fucking brain. They call me T.Y. in this game. Cause everything is everything. Smoking on the Mary Jane. Hide in the fucking plane. When I blow, I go insane. I'm not crazy, I just wanna get high. Gotta smoke that beautiful. Till I die, till I die. You can ask the question, is it really the key? Yes, it's the murder I feel. Roll a tie, hit it a couple of times, pass it to you. Going green, get a nine, get a dub, better show me love up in the club. Going green, I can taste it, then I like it. I just want no snakes, no seeds for me. In my weed, and I want to get fucked up. Show me love up in the club. Going green, I can taste it, damn I like it. I just want no sticks, no seeds for me. In my weed, man, I want to get fucked up. I don't want that bunk ass shit.
Marijuana is harmless. That's what everybody says these days. It's fun. It's recreational. Some even call it medicine. But every year, millions of young people find out that marijuana is extremely dangerous. Every year, they find out that it's deadly. Marijuana smoke is lethal and toxic. Don't believe anything you've ever heard positive about smoking marijuana. It will kill you. Really. It's really gonna kill you. Don't smoke it. It will really, really kill you. Seriously. It's gonna kill you.
Paid for, but by the way, we're not even trying anymore. We made it all up. Anti-drug, whatever thing of America.
That there was one question that was voted on that ranked fairly high, and that was whether legalizing marijuana would improve the economy and job creation. And I don't know what this says about the online audience, but...
DEA is running over a guy in a walker.
What the fuck is so
One of the most disturbing elements of the Prohibition War is how it's made police the enemy of otherwise law-abiding cannabis consumers. Fortunately, one group of police officers knows the futility of Prohibition and reaches out to educate the community and current law enforcement. Today, the Russ Belville Show visits with another speaker from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition with one clear message. Cops say legalize drugs.
Welcome, everybody. Half past the hour, and the second and fourth Thursdays are always my favorite times to get on the line with another fine speaker from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. We're joined by Jason Thomas, who is a former detention officer and marshal's deputy. He's calling from Denver, Colorado. Jason, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Russ. It's great to be on today.
Great to have you here, and I always like talking to people who have had the first-hand experience in the war on drugs, and you bring to the discussion one side of this that we haven't talked about a bit in our past few Cops Say Legalized Drugs segments. We've been talking to Border Patrol and enforcers and the people that are out there making the arrests. You were a detention officer overseeing the people who had been arrested and had been put in jail for marijuana. What does that bring to your perspective on our war on drugs?
Well, Russ, as you mentioned before, those of us in LEAP are former law enforcement officers, prosecutors, and judges, and we have that inside experience from what it's like to see it firsthand. So working in the jail, there's a 125-bed detention facility in a county in Colorado. It was a pretty easy facility to work in, but what I saw were a significant disproportionate number of arrests and incarcerations, whether it was just being held overnight or being held to go to the Department of Corrections for lower-level drug crimes, and primarily marijuana possession and low-level distribution.
Did you see that this procession of low-level drug offenders were taking up a disparate amount of the resources of the courts and the jails and perhaps even harming our public safety by not addressing more serious crimes?
I definitely agree with that. And that's one area that law enforcement will get better and our society will get better in ending the drug war is reallocating those resources that are being taken up by prisoners, those that are caught on the street, or at least stopped on the street. All that time and effort can be spent elsewhere on more serious matters and crimes. And I would say there definitely was a disproportionate amount of inmates utilizing the resources in the jail. I also, after that, worked as a security officer for a men's felony halfway house. And in there, I got to know probably 40 or 50 different guys, mainstreaming back in. Some of these were first-time offenders, went in for a year or two. Others were very hardened people from being in prison for years. But the majority of them had drugs in common, and many of them had some arrest or infraction where they were stopped by the police and either ended up in the system with that somehow. So by pursuing enforcing our drug crimes currently, it's just such a waste of time, effort, and resources on law enforcement's part, not to mention what happens to an individual's life once you're put in the system.
You know, our opponents will diminish that somewhat when we bring up that point. They'll say, well, we don't really lock people up for long periods of time for just marijuana possession. They were pleading down from something more serious. So is there any truth to that just by catching them for marijuana, we're keeping any sort of real criminals off the streets?
There is some truth to that, yes. I don't have any figures to point to, but if you look at arrest records and recidivism rates, I would argue that many of those instances that would cause a person to go to prison may have been exacerbated or may have been an instigator, say for a second strike if somebody's on parole or caught with a small amount of marijuana, well, if their parole officer doesn't get along together or if they're very hardcore, they could bust them back to the state corrections at whim. So it definitely factors in toward toward sentencing and toward further incarceration. Mm.
You know, another aspect of this incarceration nation that we're dealing with is the rise of the private prison industry and these corporations offering to take over a state's prison operations if they guarantee the beds will be 90% full. I don't know if yours was one of these, the detention center there, but I was just wondering if you had any knowledge about these private prison corporations and what your thoughts were on the idea of prisons for profit.
Well, prisons for profit, let me just say that in America, we are a capitalist society, and so there's an opportunity there for somebody to take on risk and capital costs, et cetera, in running prisons for profit. Now, with that said, it costs about $40,000 a year to house one prisoner. And if they're vowing, these companies are vowing to keep their jails open, there's something going on that, you know, they're benefiting greatly for what the laws currently uphold.
Right, and it would seem to me that it would be impossible to keep these beds 90% full without marijuana prohibition. Would you agree?
Absolutely.
Yeah, kind of the grist for the mill. All right, we're speaking with Jason Thomas. He's a former detention officer and Marshall's deputy, speaker for law enforcement against prohibition. And we're also talking a little bit here about, you know, prisons. And, you know, this stat gets thrown out a lot here in the United States that we have 5% of the world's population, but 25% of the world's prisoners. We have the largest incarcerated population of any country in history. So with respect to how marijuana is going to be a part of that, one of the ways that our opponents will diminish the legalization argument is to say that legalizing marijuana wouldn't have much to do with reducing the prison population, since so few people actually go to prison just for marijuana. Do you see it that way, or do you think they're just blowing smoke?
Well, you know, I do agree with that. That's a significant point in our looking at fighting against the drug laws and the drug war.
Hmm. All right. And so with these, so what you're saying is you agree that it's not going to do much as reducing the prison population if we legalize marijuana, or disagree?
I disagree that it will. Prisons are going to stay full. That's the bottom line. So if you take out a set of laws that unjustly incarcerate people and fill prisons, I can tell you that law enforcement officers and judges aren't going to sit around and say, okay, well, there's nothing else to do. There is an immense amount of violent crime that happens out there that, you know, even if you take out marijuana, it will have some impact. But there is enough happening that we have plenty and even too many prisons.
That's an interesting thing to consider. That so basically you're saying here, even with marijuana legalization, we would still have the world's largest prison population?
Well, I'm not sure. I wouldn't go so far to say it's the world's largest. I don't know the magnitude of difference between us and, say, a runner-up. But... you know, there's still enough happening out there that it would, you know, perhaps have a significant impact on reducing the population, but, you know, reach some equilibrium. Mm.
How about if we were to go the full Monty here and have Portugal-style decriminalization of all drugs, you know, the heroin, meth, and all of that? Would that make any significant difference?
That would make a significant difference.
Okay.
I would say the majority of people in prisons are there on drug-related offenses in some fashion, and that would be a huge leap forward in reducing our prison population.
All right. So the other concept that I wanted to go over here, you're calling us from you're in Denver, Colorado, still, I presume.
Yes, I am.
Okay, so we're seeing in Colorado the task force has just made their recommendations for the implementation of Amendment 64. We've got, you know, people now have a legal constitutional right to possess an ounce of marijuana and grow some mature plants on their own. How have you seen some major changes as far as law enforcement or imprisoning people in Colorado since this has taken effect?
We have, starting with the day after the election, and while it hasn't, there haven't been as many instances, there are still a number of municipalities that are coming out, and there have been dozens, whether it's been a city or county, and have said, we'll abide by the law if you have 1 ounce of marijuana in your possession, or if you give 1 ounce of marijuana to another person, there is nothing we'll do, no law we can enforce. So that's made a difference in those that are being incarcerated at the local level, since November. Probably the most notable city was the city of Aurora that was one of the first that came out when the medical marijuana rules and regulations were adopted by the state and said no medical marijuana in our city. So for them to come out very recently and say, now we're going to abide by the will of the voters, is a very strong statement. But there have been other municipalities from, all quarters of the state that have said, we're going to uphold this law and not, the counteractive drug laws that that have been on the books.
So generally positive results so far?
Very positive. Since November, since the election, I can now, as a marijuana user, have in private on my possession an ounce of marijuana and not fear retribution or illegality. I know a lot of people that are breathing easier because of that. With the anticipation of the legal cannabis industry here, as well as in Washington, but here in Colorado, things are really starting to heat up again in terms of the new market industry segments coming on board, starting to develop. It's really going to be an exciting, interesting year in the cannabis world and business, cannabis this year in Colorado.
We are all looking forward to it, and we'll be there in Denver on April 20th for the Big 420 celebration and Cannabis Cup that's happening there in Denver. And just one last question I wanted to get to here. We kind of theorize or hypothesize, I should say, about if cops aren't spending all their resources on marijuana, that they could spend their resources on other crimes. It's probably too soon to have any official stats on this, but are we seeing an increase in, say, more traffic tickets, more prosecution of burglaries, or any other prosecutions of real crime now that they're not going after people with an ounce?
Well, I don't believe we have, because the amount of people in proportion to those that are being caught by police, if you will, for other crimes. But those that are arrested for personal distribution or personal possession or immediate distribution to another individual, we don't hear a lot about the stat, but it's really the bigger busts and the more in-depth issues that, why police officers go in and hassle somebody. I wouldn't say it's made a big difference, but then again, I haven't had that experience.
All right. Well, Jason, Jason Thomas with Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, I want to thank you for joining us here on the show and giving us a look at the incarceration side of this equation. We appreciate your perspective.
Thanks, Russ. I appreciate being on.
All right, folks, stick around. We're going to come back and have a little time for a radical rant. Kevin Sabet's up to his old tricks again. Get me out my debunking stick.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420 friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
NORMAL stands for Responsible Adult Cannabis Use. If cannabis use is causing problems in your life, consider taking a break or seeking medical assistance. Consider ceasing cannabis use if you have a family history of mental illness. Don't drive or operate heavy machinery while impaired by cannabis use. Cannabis use is not without risks. even though the risks are far less than those posed by legal drugs.
The Russ Belville Show.
I'm not very good at singing songs, but here's a try.
According to lifelong pot smoker and rocket scientist Carl Sagan, making apple pies from scratch is extremely difficult.
If you wish to make an apple pie from scratch, you must first invent the universe.
Radical Russ and the Rolla J Studios crew will be right back after these messages.
A morning filled with 400 million suns, the rising of the moon.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
Well, you know, I never rest when it comes to tracking down Kevin Sabet. He of Project Sam, he's unleashed a whole bunch of new stream of propaganda. This showed up in the Alaska Dispatch, and I felt it necessary to rebut some of these things. You can see most of these quotes on screen. I'll go into a little more detail on this. But, of course, if you want the full detailed debunking in real time of Kevin Sabet and Project Sam, don't forget to visit smartapproaches.com. Smartapproaches.com, smartapproaches on Twitter, smartapproaches on Facebook. And, oh, I've also got Not Kevin Sabet on Twitter. That's a fun one as well. So I've got a link in my blog at RadicalRust.com if you want to find the actual full story here from the Alaska Dispatch. Since we only have a limited amount of time, I'm going to just give you the bit-by-bit lies, half-truths, misdirections, and obfuscations that I found, and the quick debunk to go with them. Here's the first lie. He actually, this is a quote from the Alaska Dispatch piece where he says, actually, drugs are not cheaper and more available than ever now. Drugs are not cheaper and more available. Well, here's the facts, people. In constant $1981 dollars, heroin is 81% cheaper. Cocaine is 80% cheaper. Meth is 57% cheaper. And heroin is 220% more pure, cocaine is 61% more pure, and methamphetamine is 39% more pure. Only marijuana has gotten more expensive. So, drugs are not cheaper? Yes, they are. All drugs are cheaper except pot. Here's the other fact. From 1991 to 2010, the 30-day prevalence of drugs among 12th graders was, for cocaine, it went from 1.4% of 12th graders to 1.3%. Woohoo! Amphetamines went from 3.2% to 3.3%. Not big deal, right? But marijuana went from 13.8% to 21.4%. So the only drugs that are being used more available than ever is marijuana. It's the only one that got more expensive and the only one that's getting used more. Here's another one of his lies. Actually, this one's a half-truth. Quote, one of the biggest myths is we are simply incarcerating otherwise innocent people who are using drugs. End quote. Well, here's the fact. 663,032 people were arrested for marijuana possession last year. Just possession. They don't all end up in prison, I'll admit that. Even though Kevin will admit that 0.7% of state inmates are in prison for possession only, that works out to 9,177 people. Now, these people do end up, these 663,032 people, do end up with mugshots that are searchable through Google for the rest of their life, and records that follow them for the rest of their life, and they do spend some time in booking and holding time in a cage. Now, Kevin will obfuscate that away by saying, well, many of these people pleaded down from serious offenses. You know, serious offenses like growing marijuana or selling it to other adults who want it. Or maybe having a probation violation. Or maybe owning a gun legally. Or maybe being a parent and endangering a minor by having them around houseplants. Or maybe by forming a conspiracy. Or maybe by obstructing justice. There's a whole lot of really serious offenses you can get popped for just for possessing marijuana. Here's another one of his lies. Quote, States with formal decriminalization laws have basically shown that there is no distinction in terms of police activity, arrests, and jail. Fact! California's passage of decrim in 2010 led to an 86% decrease in marijuana arrests. Here's one of his misdirections. We know that use in those states is far greater than it was at the times when they didn't have medical marijuana dispensaries. Now, he's referring to California and Colorado. They got their dispensaries mid-2000s and things went haywire, right? Well, here's the fact. Comparing 2002 and 2003, this is from National Survey of Drug Use and Health, before dispensaries, 2002, 2003, and then compare it to 2010, 2011, you know, after dispensaries, we find that California's 30-day use went up from 6.8 to 8.6%, and Colorado's went up from 8.8 to 11.1%. So, yes, he's absolutely right. Use did go up amongst the 30-day users. But what he won't tell you is that lifetime use, that is, people who have ever tried marijuana, has increased in California from 57.7 to 58.6, and in Colorado from 47.7 to 48.0. So what this means is the number of people who have ever tried marijuana has gone down, but the people who have tried it have more access, and now they can get it more often. That's all that's happened. We don't have more pot smokers. We have fewer pot smokers now. Just the pot smokers who used to be annual smokers can now get it more often, and they become monthly smokers. That's all that's going on here. All right, here's another one of the half-truths. Quote, we also know that peer-reviewed studies show that states with medical marijuana laws have higher rates of marijuana use and addiction among kids than states without medical marijuana laws. End quote. Yes, here's the fact. We also know these states had higher rates of marijuana use before they had medical marijuana laws as well. And that passage of these laws did not make a difference in their rates of use. It's not that medical marijuana makes more people smoke pot. It's that people who smoke pot are more likely to vote for medical marijuana. Here's one of his lies. Quote, we drink more, we gamble more, we snort cocaine more, and yes, we smoke marijuana more. And he uses this one whenever someone brings up the Netherlands. Oh, we can't compare the Netherlands. We're completely different. We drink more, we gamble more, we smoke more cocaine, more marijuana. Well, here's your facts. We are 43rd in world consumption of alcohol. Germany laughs at us. We are 43rd. And most of Europe is way ahead of us in alcohol consumption. Australia leads the world in gambling losses at $1,300 per adult resident. Singapore is number two at $1,150. The U.S. barely breaks fifth with less than $400 gambling losses per resident per year. Spain kicks our ass in cocaine consumption at 1.8% of their residents versus our 1.5%. But I will grant you, we do consume the most cocaine overall, 36.8% of the world's supply. But Brazil is closing in with 18.8%. Oh, and marijuana use? Sorry to say, folks, we're 12th in per capita marijuana use in the world, trailing countries like Italy, New Zealand, and the Czech Republic. Here's a lie. Quote, there were always far fewer users in the Netherlands than in the U.S. in terms of kids. Now they've caught up to us. End quote. Fact, according to the Netherlands National Drug Monitor, quote, the percentage of current cannabis users among mainstream secondary school students aged 12 to 18 declined gradually between 96 and 2003 and remained stable from 2007 to 2011. In 2011, 8% of this group were current cannabis users. End quote. In the U.S., 9.8%. Haven't caught up to us. Here's another lie. Quote, the Netherlands is completely reversing their policies and they're closing shops down. End quote. Fact. Completely reversing would be no longer tolerating personal possession of cannabis and making it a criminal offense. The Dutch most certainly are not doing that. Now, some border towns have closed some coffee shops because they got problems with tourists. And that's just an indictment of other European countries being intolerant, not the Dutch being tolerant. Another lie, international flavor, quote, Portugal, in many ways, is a treatment model similar to the U.S. in many states, end quote. fact, in Portugal, possession of 10 days personal supply of any drug is not a crime. Name one U.S. state where that is the case, where you can have 10 days supply of meth and you don't get arrested. 10 days supply of coke, meth, heroin, ecstasy, GHB, LSD, MDMA, psilocybin mushrooms, anabolic steroids, and pot. You can have them all. 10 days supply of the whole cornucopia. Nobody's going to slap a pair of handcuffs on you. Now, if you can tell me the U.S. state where that's the model, I'd love to hear it. Let's see. Here's another lie. Oh, this one's a misdirection. Here, I love this one. This is with respect to, the war on drugs isn't working. And this is Kevin Sabet's way of saying, well, yes, it is. 52% of Americans drink regularly. Even with every single anti-smoking campaign you could ever conjure up, 27% of Americans still smoke cigarettes. 7% of Americans have used marijuana in the past month. See, the idea here is, those drugs are legal and lots of people use those. And this one's illegal and so few people use those. You know, it's like comparing apples and oranges. Two legal drugs with an illegal one. Two drugs that are highly addictive with one drug that is not. Two drugs that are incredibly toxic with one drug that is not. Here's some facts for you. First of all, if you want a comparison as to what's going to work or what's not going to work, you wouldn't compare legal alcohol to illegal marijuana. You'd compare legal alcohol to illegal alcohol to see what's working. And we all know how well that last experiment turned out. Second of all, this drink responsibly and these anti-smoking truth campaigns we've had over the years have lowered the drinking stat from 60% who used to drink. You know, back when I was in high school, 60% of people drank. Now it's 52%. Back when I was in high school, 37% of people smoked tobacco. Now it's 27%. So did we make those illegal? Did we arrest anyone? Did we force people to have to go to rehab? No. And yet they went down. Two legal drugs and their use went down. And for the use of marijuana, when I was in high school, 14% of U.S. adults were using marijuana. Now it's down to 7%. We've cut it in half, but it's illegal. So let's see. Drinking and smoking went down, and they're legal. Marijuana went down, and it's illegal. So what? It tells us nothing. If we actually had legal marijuana, we could have public service campaigns. We could have educational campaigns. We could card kids, and the use might go down. And third, here's the biggest thing. This assumes that marijuana use going up is a bad thing. Hey, if people are trading pot for beer, people are trading pot for OxyContin, if they're using marijuana instead of more harmful drugs, wouldn't this be an overall good thing? Here's another one I like. This is one of my favorites. I love this line. Alcohol and marijuana, in fact, are usually used together. Visit any underutilized bar at a cannabis cup to disprove this one. And yeah, I love this one. Alcohol has a long history of widespread accepted use in our culture, and widespread marijuana use does not have that. Oh, so you're admitting that widespread cultural acceptance of a drug is all that's necessary for us to ignore all of its harms. So when we do have widespread cultural acceptance of marijuana, then it'll be okay. So how widespread does it gotta be? We already have more tokers than Texans in this country. There are more people that smoke pot this year than the population of Texas. Is that enough culture? How about 40 years since the 1960s of an active cannabis culture? Or should we go back to the 1920s with Cab Calloway in the culture? Or should we go back to the 1840s with Dr. O'Shaughnessy in medical culture? Or should we go back to 1611 and the first hemp plantations on this continent 402 years ago? Is that enough culture? Oh, I got all ranty. Hey, we're gonna take hour two here. All sorts of fun. Brian's here from Outpost. We're gonna talk music, play some acoustic grooves, and have some fun. For Brian the Red, Brian from Outpost, Bacon Dan, two folks I don't remember, and myself. I'm Radical Russ. Till next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belleville Show. The Russ Belleville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it.